Hello there, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome once again to the Fred Bertelsen Old Time Radio Room of RadioOutOfThePast.org. Today's program was brought to you by Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. Today's date is Saturday, March 12th, 2016. This is your MSS host, Luis Jr., assisting with bringing to you yet another exciting and exhilarating internet broadcast of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. Well, folks, without any further delays, I will have to introduce our director and the head honcho of MSS, Miguel Amaro. Yep, he's back. We got him into the studio, and he has put together one of his famous OTR surprises for your listening enjoyment. If everyone could just please sit back, grab your favorite drinks and snacks, and enjoy the program. Miguel, the microphone is yours.
Thanks, Luis. Hi, everybody. Welcome to my presentation here on Michael's Saturday Surprise for this Saturday. I would like to thank Daniel V. Hill and Ron Bond for inspiring me to present what I'm about to play for you guys tonight. As you all know, Daniel, of course, played the Carpenters documentary last week. That got me thinking. I decided to postpone what I was going to previously play for you guys. American Masters presents Fats Domino.
Hey, now just gather around quietly. Come on. Quiet. Now just stand by. Here he is now. Say, Fats, a bunch of the kids would like to listen to you blowing up a storm. Would you let them listen in?
Well, as a rule, we don't do it, but for the kids, I'm more than glad.
Hooray! I like the way you walk. I like to hear you talk. Let me hold your hand. It's right on the street. I want a girl like you. Deal my trouble to you. Don't be afraid. You heard what I said.
How'd this rock and roll all get started, anyway?
Well, what they call rock and roll now is rhythm and blues. I've been playing for 15 years in New Orleans.
A native son of New Orleans, Fats Domino would pioneer the big beat sound and become one of the world's most beloved entertainers. Antoine Domino Jr. arrived on February 26, 1928, delivered by a midwife with the assistance of his grandmother, Carmelite, who had been born into slavery. Antoine Jr. was the last of eight Domino children and the only one to be born in New Orleans.
The neighborhood that Fats Domino grew up in is called the Lower Ninth Ward in New Orleans. And it's arguably where a lot of the best musicians came from. And is a part of the city that enjoys a reputation in New Orleans for being, that's the heart, really, the heartbeat of the city.
It was almost like another world, like another world. There was always talk about when you talked about the Lower Ninth Ward, you talk as if the people who lived down there didn't have as much going on as the people mid-city. Of course, some of the people who lived down there had a lot going on.
I was born on Julian Avenue, down here in the Ninth Ward. They said I was born in a house at 1939 Julian Avenue.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I went to school right down the street here. It's about 10 blocks from here, McCarty School. And I remember years ago when I used to come home from school, my mom used to be cooking on a wood stove. And sometimes when I got from school, that morning I had to cut wood in that evening. Another thing, when I lived on Jane Avenue, I used to pick iron and copper. And the street Jane Avenue that I used to live on, the street was so bad, the hole was so big, I used to get strapped from the cotton mill and fill the street up with nothing but tin and iron. That's the way Julian Avenue was. And I just sell it to Southern Strap. If you made your 20 cents or 25 cents, then that was a lot of money, 25 cents during that time.
when he got out and about, he was roaming the streets of the Ninth Ward, and he would love to pick up things where he'd see, and sometimes he'd sell them to the junk man, who ironically would become part of the song, the Junkers Blues, that he'd later record. His life was changed, basically, when his sister married Harrison Verrett, who was a relatively well-known New Orleans musician who played banjo.
My brother-in-law Harrison used to play Papa Celestine band, you know. And one time I went to French Quarter, and I heard him play out there several times. That's how I really learned from my brother-in-law Harrison Verrett. He had a lot of patience. He had a lot of patience with children, you know. And that's what I loved about him.
Fats had already played around on the family piano since they had bought it. First of all, they put it out in the garage, keep him from driving him crazy a little bit, but he even quit school because he wanted to play the piano so much. So he only went to the fourth grade. Harrison actually taught him how to play it, and he put the notes on the piano on pieces of tape, and it was a beat-up piano. You could actually see the metal through the ivory, but Fats, you know, got some sound out of it.
We had an upright piano in the house. He teach me the chords, the foundation. If you know how to play a chord, you can write the chords down to you. You can play anything, any song, or any band, just by the chord. And after I learned that, that's when I just went on my own.
Everybody had a piano. I used to stop. And the man used to say, what Fat's at? His son would say, I don't know. He said, well, you got a piano over there. You better go look. You might be able to lift the piano. Where the piano at? That's where Fat's at.
From the late 30s to the 40s, Fats started listening more to jukeboxes. That's basically the way that blacks heard music in those days, because not a lot of them had record players. There was no radio that played black music at that time. Fats' primary love for music was in the boogie-woogie piano players. He always listened to Mead Lux Lewis and Pete Johnson, the great piano players. His cousins had a bar, and he actually not only had a jukebox there, he also had a sounding machine, which was, I guess, kind of a luxury in those days. One he particularly remembered, I think it was a video called Lowdown Dog. It was actually a comedian who was found his woman fooling around with different guy in the kitchen, okay, and something like that. And he chased her, and he started singing this song, pointing his finger at her, saying, I ain't gonna be your low-down dog no more.
I ain't gonna be your low-down dog no more. Ain't gonna be your
low-down. People didn't know at the time, it was actually Joe Turner who was singing. He was just miming the song. And it was Pete Johnson who was playing the boogie-woogie piano. Fats loved that video, and he actually started playing Lowdown Dog, and he kept playing it for the next half a century.
It's very hard to find out from him what his formative influences are. Basic blues, old star blues piano. And boogie woogie, I mean, that, you know, that too. Straight ahead, boogie woogie.
Bad, bad whiskey. Bad, bad whiskey. Bad, bad whiskey. Made me lose my happy home.
Another favorite performer of Fats was Amos Milburn, who was a great boogie woogie player. Amos played these low-down blues, and they were all really sexy. Fats played blues like Amos Milburn.
That's what I mean.
Another influence of Fats was Louis Jordan, who was the most popular black singer performer of the 1940s. And he was famous for all of his novelty songs. But more significantly, he did some songs I would almost consider rockers, like Caledonia.
Walking with my baby, she got great big feet. She's long, lean, and lank, and ain't had nothing to eat. But she's my baby, and I love her just the same. Crazy about that woman, 'cause Caledonia is her name.
He's shouting, and he's playing this heavy boogie-woogie beat. And so that was a song that almost everybody in New Orleans played at one time or another.
I'll always love you, baby, because Caledonia is your name.
After Fats started playing in the little Ninth Ward clubs, he started running into different people who would be influential in his career. The first one was probably Billy Diamond, who was a local band leader. He was a bass player. He was a little short go-getter. Fats told me, and during those days, Billy Diamond was the only person who could find a gig. He could find a gig when nobody else could.
I'd give him the name Fats before then, before he even had a record. I gave him the name Fats after a guy named Fat Waller back in them days. He was a great piano player. Well, he got mad when I played together to call him Fat. They don't call me Fat. Don't call me Fat. Well, I don't know what you call me Fat, but they'll call you Fat Billy.
While Fats was pounding out Boogie Woogie with Billy Diamond's band at the Hideaway and other neighborhood clubs, a New Orleans trumpet sensation by the name of Dave Bartholomew was on a roll.
Dave Bartholomew was one of the most popular, if not the most popular, band leader in the city. And occasionally Fats went and see him and check him out. Earl Palmer, who was Dave's great drummer, had him sit in one time. Fats got up there and played that little jam and boogie woogie, Swanee River Boogie or whatever it was, and maybe another song or two. Dave Bartholomew did not like that. As a matter of fact, he came up to Earl Palmer's and said afterwards, "I thought I told you not to let that guy sit in." Of course, he had no clue that they would have an incredible history to come as far as making some of the most influential records in the next 10 or 15 years.
One night, Bartholomew brought a man from Imperial Records, a Mr. Lou Chudd, to see Fats perform at a local club.
I was at the Hideaway. I was real famous at the Hideaway for just playing other people's number. David Lou Chudd came down there one night. Lou Chudd wanted to hear me sing and play. So I did.
Fats played the Junkers Blues.
They call me a jungle.
Champion Jack Dupree was the barrel house piano player from New Orleans who recorded the original version of the Junker Blues in 1940 and had a mild success with it. And that was a song that really sold Fats to Lou Chudd. Lou said, "I got to have this guy," and he actually signed him right there on the spot that very night.
And but a week later, about 2 weeks later, we got together and recorded the first record, Fat Man, 1949.
And we never looked back for 25 years.
Said, "We're going to record the Fat Man." I said, "We are?" Well, I got excited. During that period of time, we had a radio program, the Fat Man. So when we got in the studio, Dave said, "This is Fats, the Fat Man." I look at this, I said, "Dave, the Fat Man is a white man."
Watching North Greenville gal.
Fat Man, the first hit that he had, the first record in 1949, was basically the Junkers Blues. And he told me this the other day. He said, I asked him about the Fat Man. He said, it was just the Junkers Blues. I just changed it to from they call me a Junker to they call me the Fat Man.
Fats played it as if it was his own. It was very final when Fats played. If you had never heard whoever played the original, if you heard Fats Domino's version, that was enough. You can just take it from there.
So we said, what are we gonna call him? I said, hell, we're gonna call him Fat Man. As soon as they heard it, that was it.
With the Fat Man rising to number one in the February 1950 Rhythm and Blues charts, Lou Chud's hunch had paid off. He quickly reassembled Fats with Dave Bartholomew and band for additional sessions at Cosmo Matassa's Rampart Street Studio. Cosmo's J&M Music Shop was the only recording studio in town, and was quickly becoming the mecca for record men looking to cash in on the New Orleans rhythm and blues sound. And Dave Bartholomew's little orchestra became the house band, backing nearly every performance recorded there.
New Orleans produces a disproportionately large amount of talented musicians, and it really comes up with the raw material.
It's the only place in the world where everybody, even white listeners, clap on 2 and 4 instead of 1 and 3. Right away, you can tell if a white dude's from New Orleans, man. When you hear him clap, he's on the beat. And that's kind of a natural thing with New Orleans people. You got kids in the street, man, that's got a lot of talent musically if he's channeled in a certain way. So, well, look at the history of the town. It's always been music. So everybody, you're born with a lot of it instilled in you.
You can call it the big beat, the sweet beat, whatever it is, but New Orleans got the beat.
There have always been gigs in New Orleans. There's only really a few periods in the history of New Orleans in the 20th century where there's been a really thriving recording scene. And the fact that there was is largely due to Dave Bartholomew and Cosmo Matassas.
Cosmo Matassa and Dave Bartholomew put New Orleans on the map.
The room was 15 by 16. I started recording direct to disc, which had a couple of good features about it. For one thing, you didn't do any editing, you didn't do any pickups, you didn't do any overdubbing. You played the damn thing from beginning to end. And that made for performance. And I think that helped me. I started on the fact that everybody performed together, beginning to end, had to be right. I always, till today, thought that my job was to put on disc what was happening out in the studio. It was OJT, as Dave told me, on the job training.
Imperial wanted us to go on a tour after Fat's first record, which was Fat Man Blues. The other side was Detroit City Blues. We had 3 days was late starting this tour because Fats would hide every time we go to look for him because he was afraid to go on the tour. He was, you know, shook up. First time he ever went on any tour. And who we got to go with us on the trip was Professor Longhair.
I got nothing but stars with me. Lee Allen, Professor Longhair, Fats Domino, Dave Bartholomew, Earl Palmer, Frank Fields. We're playing in a dump. At 11:30, 12 o'clock, I said, well, he's supposed to pay me an intermission. Earl Palmer said, I seen that man go out the door. I said, well, he going home to get the money. That's been 40 years, he ain't come back yet.
Well,
Between 1950 and 1955, Fats recorded a steady stream of singles for Imperial, with many of them charting high in the R&B charts. Things were buzzing at Cosmo Studio, and Dave Bartholomew was the go-to guy for all the record labels wishing to record in New Orleans.
Well, I'm going to New Orleans. I'm going to skin the party crew. Nova's carnival floor.
He produced the sessions, wrote the arrangements, and used his band to back the performers.
He was the man number one. He was the boss with the hot sauce.
We didn't call him the chief for nothing. He was the chief. He kept us focused. And particularly people like Fats, he kept focused, because Fats tended to doodle and ramble and that sort of thing. I think without a Dave, there might not have been a Fats in the national sense of it.
Fats showed up in his Cadillac at Cosmo Studio, and Dave was cutting a session with Lloyd Price. And the piano player at the time in Dave's band, I think it was Salvador Doucette, was not really cutting the triplets too well. And so Fats was the perfect answer to that problem, and he asked Fats if he would sit in. And then he played that amazing introduction to Lottie Miss Claudie. And then the triplets, and then a solo in the middle, and it... Lottie Miss Claudie became the biggest hit of the year and knocked his own number one going home out of the charts.
Rock and roll party. And here he is in person, Alan Freed.
Hello, everybody. How y'all? Welcome to our Rock and Roll Jubilee of Stars. And here we go to rockin' with Waylon Tenorman, Freddie Mitchell, and the Rock and Roll Boogie. Here we go.
Alan Freed had actually started using the phrase rock and roll at the end of 1954. And the first ever so-called rock and roll concert was his show in New York, January 55, and it was an all-black show. Alan Freed was using the phrase rock and roll to popularize rhythm and blues primarily with white teenagers.
Goodbye, although I'll cry and ashamed. I still feel angry.
And so this crossing point was very significant because Fats Domino came along with his biggest hit ever. And, of course, that was Ain't That a Shame.
Goodbye, ain't that a shame. My tears feel angry. Ain't that a shame. You're the one you blame.
That's nothing. That was one sentence. Ain't that a shame? Don't have no bridge to it. No middle. It's the same sentence over and over again. But we sold it with the music. Da 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 da. Boom. In other words, I had the whole band playing like a bass. Boom. Boom.
We cry when you said goodbye. Ain't that a shame?
It was also one of his simplest songs ever. If you ever listen to Ain't That a Shame, you'll see You Made Me Cry When You Said Goodbye. And that's actually a classic Fats Domino lyric because he just wrote things in the most simple terms possible.
I remember Dan telling me, your record going pop. I know what he's talking about. Lucha, the record going pop. You got a big record. Well, I know I had been sellers before. Going home, the fat man, you know, that would broke me through. Everybody buying my record, black and the white. You see, you got a big one now.
The surprise success of Ain't That a Shame was a game changer for both Fats and Imperial Records. Though finally achieving a crossover hit that was selling phenomenally to both black and white audiences, Dave and Fats could not have predicted what would happen within a week of its release.
You made me cry when you said goodbye.
Mine was not a week. Somebody told me, you know, a fellow by the name of Pat Boone coming out with your record next week. Wow, that's something quick.
And Pat Boone was a very innocent white crooner, should we say. And he just was kind of, trying to croon a song that should have been a rocker.
Keep in mind, I was young, you know. A lot of people wasn't going to buy us at all. Because we were black at that time, you know. It was segregation in music, too. I know that, you know. I don't want to hear it. But after they heard it a while, it started growing on you, and that's it, like anything else.
He did it all right. It's a lot of records.
While Ain't That a Shame was burning up the 1955 R&B and pop charts, other black artists, such as Chuck Berry and Little Richard, were following Fats' lead. Rock and roll era had begun.
Rolling, Master A. Master A, take one.
By early 1956, Elvis Presley was the king of the pop charts. Rockers Bill Haley and the Comets, Gene Vincent, and Carl Perkins were also grabbing the attention of the nation's youth. By March of 1956, Fats's I'm in Love Again became his second top 10 hit. Dave Bartholomew's Big Beat was making Antoine Domino a very famous man.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
entire 1956 belonged to Fats Domino. With 9 records scoring in the top 10 pop and rhythm and blues charts, there was no stopping him. And in that year, he recorded the song for which he will be forever remembered.
I found my thrill on Blueberry Hill.
Blueberry Hill was a pop standard that had originally been recorded in 1940 by Gene Autry for a singing cowboy movie. But the most significant version for Fats was the Louis Armstrong version. It was a phenomenal time for him. The unfortunate thing is that Lou Chud of Imperial Records actually tried too hard to sell Fats Domino to a wide audience. He thought that if you made it sound more pop, it would sell more white. But he kind of missed the point of Fats Domino. And so he was having him record all these standards. Some worked, some didn't. As Blueberry Hill proved, when Fats redid a standard, he changed it all around so the people that knew the old standard, they barely recognized it.
And the rest is history. A record that has, I've been told, it's over 5.5 million records, Blueberry Hill. And of course, his number one record of all time.
I found my thrill.
He had an amazing string of success at that time. But with Blueberry Hill, Blue Monday, and I'm Walkin', Fats had 3 huge hits at the time. Even Time Magazine recognized it. He was huge. He was actually headlining the biggest shows in rock and roll at that time. People like Chuck Berry and Little Richard, Buddy Holly, the Everly Brothers, and Jerry Lee Lewis were all underneath Fats. They did not even approach his record sales at that time. He was selling 1 million records every month.
There was a time he and Elvis Presley for a year or two there were neck and neck in sales. People don't realize this.
We did it in California. And in recording Blue Monday, they had another saxophone player playing the baritone. He first didn't like the way he soloed on it. He said, "Hey, but I want you to play the baritone. You want me to play the baritone? I got my tenor here." He said, "No, please, play the solo on baritone." So I played the solo on baritone, and he went, "Wow." And people love it. Like the song, da-da-da-da. Let me see, can I play it on my saxophone? I don't have my strap.
Blue Monday, I think this is one of the greatest things I ever wrote.
By the end of 1956, all of the major television networks and Hollywood began to call. And the entire nation was tuning in.
Gonna shine in my back door someday, just you wait and see. Just you wait and see.
Let's face it, rhythm and blues is here. So we have a man here today who's just about the hottest attraction in that field. As a matter of fact, I have a little award to present to him a bit later. Something I don't know if he knows about yet. The one and only Fats Domino.
Oh, my dreams. Oh,
you want to make a good impression? Because this means an awful lot to you to be on those type of shoes. You're not only helping them, you're helping yourself. Getting that self-exposure all over the world. So you think about that and you want to do the best you can.
When Fats appeared on network TV show, it increased sales tremendously.
Fats, as you know, is one of our great disciples of rock and roll. And Fats, according to a clipping in Downbeat, Dizzy Gillespie just finished a tour in the Middle East where he was a smash.
Crazy, man.
And Louis Armstrong was a big hit in South Africa.
Crazy, man.
And the rumor has it that you're going to introduce rock and roll to Alaska.
Cool, man.
I'm walking, yes, indeed, and I'm talking about you and me, and I'm hoping you'll ask me back again.
I'm flying high, I'm sighing. Me, oh my, I'm hoping you'll ask me back again. Again.
What you gonna do when the well runs dry? You gonna run away and hide. I'm gonna run right by your side. Be fair, come not even die.
This was November 18th, 1956. A very significant date. A very cold night in New York City when Ed Sullivan announced Fats Domino.
The Ed Sullivan Show.
I had a lot of respect for him. He spent a lot of time with us. He gave us his old all, you know what I mean? He would be with us all day long, and that was an awful thing. He had us as many times as we wanted to.
New Orleans, he's had so many of this. He's had 1 million sales record. Here is Fats Domino singing Blueberry Hills.
He put Fats' band behind a curtain, and he put Fats just playing the piano by himself, which was a very strange thing for Fats. And then even stranger was at the very end of the show, of the song, I should say, Fats stood up It's kind of like Ed Sullivan wanted people to see how chubby he was. So, you know, he looks harmless.
One of the great record stars high on the list of all hits in the country today is a very happy little rotund fellow named Fats Domino.
That was the beginning of the harmless Fats Domino mythology, which still continues to some degree today.
Well, Fats, I have this surprise for you now. This is from Cashbox, one of the important record industry trade papers. And they want you to have this award because you've been voted by the Disc Jockeys of America the most programmed rhythm and blues male vocalist of the year 1956. Congratulations.
Thank you.
In 1957, the Fats Domino Band traveled 30,000 miles around the country, working a total of 355 shows and selling out nightclubs and concert halls everywhere they ventured.
He was one of the biggest stars out. There was no other bigger star than Fats in the rock and roll field.
We got to knock and push them off of us. You know, I mean, you know, they was just something else. They knocked down the walls to get the Fats Domino. I'm not kidding. They really did.
I did a lot of traveling, but nothing like being with Fats Domino. We drive and drive, and I keep saying, well, are we going to stop for lunch? Are we going to eat?
You know, him and his brother came in the house and said, no, we want you to come and go to Pascagoula, Florida with us. We got to be there tonight. He said, it's Christmas. I don't want to go nowhere. And you know what happened? They took and carried me and picked me up. I'm helpless and put me on a bus. You know, I was in Florida.
That was my life out there. A lot of times we're doing them one-nighters all night long, sleeping in the car and all that kind of.
The most fun was after we got off in the hotels. There was party going on from the bottom to the top floor.
With Fats's enormous popularity, promoters had little trouble filling concert halls and ballrooms to capacity. White and black fans clamored to see Fats live, sometimes with explosive results.
He had more riots than any other rock and roller, maybe ever. He had four major riots at his shows, partly because of integration, but also the fact that they had alcohol at these shows. So they were mixing alcohol plus dancing plus the races together for the first time in a lot of these places. And it was leading to little fights, which soon bloomed into huge fights, and they called the police.
We got caught in two riots, and it wasn't a racial thing. There was a fight. And within the fight, the police decided to throw tear gas in the hall. And everybody panicked. Well, it turned out to be not to be a riot, but people trying to escape, trying to get away from the tear gas. When they started broadcasting that there was a Fats Domino was playing and there was a race riot, that was $1 million exposure right there. All the news media picked it up. So that was good publicity. But there, it wasn't really a race riot.
Fact, this rock and roll music seems to be under an awful heavy attack from all over the country. There's been riots, it's been banned in certain parts of this country and abroad. You know of any reason for that?
Well, as far as I know, music makes people happy, and it makes me happy.
You wouldn't blame it on rock and roll?
No, indeed.
Well, what happened up in Rhode Island where you were
playing? Well, you know, even the Navy and the Marines get together.
You don't think it was the music?
No, couldn't be.
Life on the road for an African-American rock and roll band, even the country's most popular one, was mired in the pre-civil rights mores of the day.
Sometimes we used to go 100 miles out the way to get a place to stay.
It was tough. We stayed in little small black hotels. We didn't have the privilege in the restaurants. I started driving the bus, and I would go into these restaurants, go to these places, and start to help integration along to push things, you know. And when the hotels first integrated, I was the first ones in them.
Well, I think there is no doubt about the fact that
The Negro is more determined now than ever before to be free. I think that that is a discontent in the Negro community, a frustration and an impatience, if we can use that word, that we haven't seen before. I've been around the country for the last few days speaking, and I don't think I've ever seen the Negro population of our nation more aroused and more determined as I've seen on these particular trips.
Before Martin Luther King got killed, Fat was in that same hotel 2 weeks before then, playing for the garbage workers there. He'd bring the workers together whenever he played white and black. It's something about his personality that draw a lot of people, you know.
Once it was recognized, once it was accepted, that once the audience, the people, start wanting this music, there was nothing that the radio stations or television can do about it. They had to accept it.
So there was this historic moment in American history that the things were kind of coming together. And people don't really credit rock and roll with integrating America, but it really did.
Constantly far away from his loving family and his Ninth Ward home, life on the road was beginning to take its toll.
Anybody, when you first leave home, especially New Orleans, you still got home on your mind. And the whole band is like that. Every time I had a Monday night off, I usually fly home.
Although he received the adulation of millions of fans, Fats always longed to be on that last stretch of highway that led to the city he loved.
It's time I'm walking to New Orleans. I'm walking to New Orleans. I'm gonna need to parachute when I get through walking the blue. When I get back to New Orleans, I've got my suitcase in my hand. Now ain't that a shame? I'm leaving here today. Yes, I'm going back home to stay. Yes, I'm walking to New Orleans. To be my honey, till I lost all my money. No use for me to cry, I'll see you by and by. Cause I'm walking to New Orleans, and I got no time for talking. I'm walking to New Orleans.
By the end of 1963, a new generation of rockers, many of whom idolized Fats, were grabbing the world's attention. Although Fats continued to record, his top 10 hit records were now well behind him. For the next 40 years, he brought the big beat around the world, performing his hits at sold-out shows from New Orleans to Japan. Up until his final public performance in 2006, Dave Bartholomew and Herb Hardesty were often in the band. For 65 years, Fats never departed from his boogie-woogie roots, and always ended his shows with a gumbo-spiced ode to New Orleans. When the Saints go marching in.
When the Saints marching in. When the Saints go marching in.
We always go over the Saints. Sometimes we couldn't get off the band, then we got back.
When the Saints go marching in. When the sun begins to shine. When the sun.
Gentlemen, when you work with a man 50 years, that should speak for itself.
The stories he told were so charming. even when he was telling the hard luck story. A prince of a man.
When the sun begins to shine, when the sun begins to shine, as it
was. Colleges and universities that had courses only on jazz artists. I can say, why not on artists like Fats or Chuck Berry? And I can never understand why the cities that they represented didn't recognize them the same way they would recognize a Louis Armstrong.
John Lennon, the first song he ever learned was Ain't That a Shame. First rock and roll song that George Harrison ever heard was I'm in Love Again. And Paul McCartney has just recorded a slew of Fats Domino songs. On top of that, Elvis Presley once even called Fats the king of rock and roll. Little Richard said that he worshipped Fats, was honored to touch his hand. And of course, he recorded most of his hits with members of Fats' band.
Here you have a formula that they haven't had to change in over half a century. It's as good now as it was then. The music business changes every week. Here is something that you're witnessing and listening to the same sound that music lovers would have been hearing half a century ago, and it still does the trick. It does the trick because it's really good.
Two Daves, I don't think that would have worked. Two Fats wouldn't have gotten off the ground. No, Two Fats would have had to find another One Dave somewhere.
I'm glad I could join the elites and just be one in the crowd. Together, we stand. Divided, we fall.
Fats Domino and other American Masters, visit pbs.org/AmericanMasters or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. The Big Beat, Fats Domino and the Birth of Rock and Roll is available on DVD. To order, visit shoppbs.org or call 1-800-PLAY-PBS.
You still got it, too.
Blue Monday, oh, I hate Blue Monday. Got to work like a slave all day. Here come Tuesday, oh, Tuesday. I'm so tired, got no time to play. Now here come Wednesday, I'm beat to my socks. My girl called, got to tell her that I'm out. Cause Thursday is a hard working day, and Friday I'll get my pay. Saturday morning, whoa, Saturday morning, all my tiredness have gone away. In my honey, and I'm out on the stem to play. But Sunday morning, my head is bad. Boy, it waited for the time that I've had. But I've got to get my rest, cause Monday's a mess. Thank you.
Saturday morning, oh, Saturday morning, all my tiredness have gone away. I got my money in my honey, and I'm out on a stem to play. But Sunday morning, my head is bad. Boy, I'm waiting for the time that I had. But I've got to get my rest, 'cause Monday's a mess.
Melody.
But all of the vows we made were never to be. We're apart. You put me still. For you are my thrill.
That was American Masters, Fats Domino. This is about going to wrap it up for my presentation here on Michael Saturday Surprise for this Saturday. Hope you guys have enjoyed this program, as well as the few songs that I played for you guys. Let me remind you about our upcoming marathon, April 30th, 9-9 Pacific, noon to midnight Eastern, here in the Fred Bertelsen Old Time Radio Room. Luis, my friend, come and tell these people how to post complaints, comments, grievances, requests, whatever else may be on their minds.
Okay, Miguel, you set them up. Now it's my turn to knock them down. And great work, by the way. So, ladies and gentlemen, that is just about going to wrap things up for this week's broadcast of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. We hope you enjoyed the program here tonight, but don't worry. There are more yet to come. If you have any questions, comments, requests, or maybe even a complaint or two, please address them to the head honcho himself. That is Miguel Amaro. He can be found at mikeameli@earthlink.net. That's MIKEAMELI @earthlink.net. We will soon be releasing the key and returning the room to you, the listening audience. Please do with it as you wish, for as long as you wish. But just remember, be nice to one another. On behalf of myself and the rest of the MSS crew, have a great night, a great weekend. Spring is almost here. Goodbye.